have Mr. Jack Hollins, who's an architect, come up. And I know, Mr. Cole, you're going to want a shortstop, Mr. Hollins, but do take...
Oh, no, I'll sit here and be quiet.
Thank you. and I'm sure you'll find it difficult to do so.
I'm overwhelmed with the presentation.
Well, we're trying to be brief, Mr. Cole, but I do want to point out that the comp plan does require us to take a look at
We will be talking about the application instead of the opposition. You've spent a lot of time on the opposition. Yeah. Now we're going
to
talk.
Cole, you asked us to speed it up, so I assume that you knew everything that you needed to know about this application.
We want to hear about the application.
Right here, sir.
Let's go.
good evening. My name is Jack Holland. I'm a partner at Mushinsky, Volsky & Associates, MV&A. We're an architecture and planning firm in Bethesda, Maryland. We work throughout the Mid-Atlantic region and up and down the East Coast and stretch out into the Midwest at times. I'm a registered architect and member of the American Institute of Architects, the Urban Land Institute, and the International Council of Shopping Centers. I've been planning and designing retail projects for over 20 years and mixed-use projects such as the one that we're presenting tonight with street-oriented retail and public green space for about the last 17 years. Although the proposed rezoning is just a land use issue, the comprehensive plan does contain a section entitled the community design element. We took that into consideration when we prepared this plan and in hopes of creating a plan that wasn't an inwardly focused island, but in fact was something that reached out to the surrounding community. If you have any questions about the plan, I'd be happy to answer them, but I think I'll just cut my presentation short. There is one thing I wanted to mention about the ICSC and to try to settle down sort of the different terminology that's going on. What we're proposing is a community center, again, of 300,000 square feet of retail, 20,000 square feet of office. Any other center, like a community center, as we've mentioned before, is typically, or a community center, a regional shopping center, is typically an enclosed mall of 400,000 to 800,000 square feet. And these days, 800,000 square feet isn't, for a big metropolis, isn't a very big shopping center. So any discussion of a regional shopping center on this site just really isn't accurate. We're planning a community center.
And your tab has all these pictures.
We prepared those, five exhibits, and you know most of the. What I was going to do is just go through the text that's along with those exhibits. So rather than just repeat everything, if there are questions that I can answer regarding where we've placed buildings or the reasons for where roads are where they are or anything like that, I'd be happy to get into that.
Does anybody want to hear that, Mike? You want to?
No. Well, I know we're looking at rezoning, but I mean. You say you're planning a community center. That sounds very nice. It sounds like people would love that. Well, how do you, what makes it a community center?
A community center is a center that's generally anchored by a grocery store.
Oh, and shopping
oftentimes,
center.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, so you have to excuse me. When you're working with the International Council and the Council of Shopping Centers, that's about all they want to talk about are shopping centers. So, yes, it's a grocery store-anchored shopping center. In this case, we have a small an off-price department store that goes along with it.
Off-price?
Discount or off-price. Not a Macy's or that kind of department store, but I would say something, Target was mentioned, Kohl's could probably happen here, that type of a store. You asked about Sam's Club and Walmart and those types. None of the footprints on that plan are big enough.
No.
I think the biggest box there is about 130,000 square feet, and Walmart's sort of, and Sam's Club's start at about 150,000 square feet. And go increasingly larger.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
And now, Mr. Cole, the moment you've been waiting for.
Application.
The last witness. All right.
Traffic guy?
This is the traffic guy. Yeah, there you go. Everybody gets excited because we have a little slideshow, right? Ms. Deaver, gentlemen, I do have Bob Rogers from Orth Rogers with the capable assistance of Derek Kennedy, who will give you an overview of the traffic issues that are related to this particular project, its effects on Lewis, clogging, gridlock, evac plans, and a number of other items that have been raised. You know, before we get to that, I did want to say one thing, and just as a follow-up to Mr. Martin's, because it may be important, and I know Ms. Deaver, you've asked about big box stores like Walmart and whatnot. There was mention of Target, and I imagine at some point in time somebody will say, if you're going to have a Target or you're going to have a Kohl's, you should come in here with something that shows that there is some commitment to that. I can tell you that our clients have, in fact, had active contact with Target, with a bank about going in there, but as is the case with most of the stores like Target, Kohl's, or those types of department store, they do not want their competition to know where they think they may go. And everything is couched in response to our clients' applications. And we have narrowed it down to 3 spots, 4 spots, 2 spots, whatever it is. We will never know until the last moment. No one will know. And in particular, the competition will never know, because that's the way it works in those particular department store type land acquisition scenarios. I wish we could come in and say to you, we're going to bring you an X, a Y, or a Z, a Cole named after George, but we
couldn't
do that.
Well, in this economic environment, I'm looking at what the possibilities are, because often people have great ideas and great plans, but they don't always, they're not always able to follow.
The possibilities are everything that's permitted in a CR1 district is possible for this location.
Absolutely.
That's what's possible.
Mr. Schrader.
But not a casino.
Not a casino?
No,
not legal.
It's not a specifically listed item.
It's not a legal use in the state.
Is it prohibited?
So forget that one.
Is it prohibited?
It's not prohibited, but I think if it's not prohibited, there'd be another path, such as a conditional use you'd have to go.
Well, we would have, there's the issue about getting state licenses too, ma'am.
Well, that's not the question, though. The question from was, you know, could it become a casino? So I have my answer is no, it's not under CR1. Thank you. What kind of zoning did you need for that? What would you need for that?
I guess
heavy industrial?
We're going to have a casino one designation at some point.
Thank you.
Could you move the tripod? Yeah, move that tripod.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to be using the boards first, sir.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's the boards first.
What would you need to have a casino? What kind of zoning? You'd have to come back for an overlay conditional use or something like that. Yeah, but it's a little longer. Well, people want to know.
Good evening.
I know.
That's it. For the record, my name is Bob Rogers. I'm chairman of the board of Orth Rogers and Associates. It's a traffic engineering transportation planning firm founded in 1977. We have about 85 employees in several different offices. Derek Kennedy and I come out of the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania office. I have a bachelor's, a master's, and a PhD in civil engineering, all majoring in transportation studies. I'm a registered professional engineer in Delaware, also Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Nevada, and Florida, and work in those states. I'm also certified by the Institute of Transportation Engineers as a professional traffic operations engineer, and there's about 1,500 of them in the world. I think two are in the room tonight. I'm also a fellow in the Institute of Transportation Engineers, past international president of that 17,000-member organization. And I've been doing this work now for slightly more than 40 years. And I'm happy to see you tonight in the public. Give a presentation on traffic. I'll start with boards, and then we'll be doing a simulation. We have 2 sets of boards, one facing the public and one facing the council, if you will. As the council knows, the process of doing a traffic impact study in Delaware is very tightly regulated and controlled. And I can speak from experience from all the different jurisdictions where I work. One of the most common questions is always, why did you study this intersection but not that intersection? That decision is made by the Department of Transportation. Projects begin with a scope of study. At the scope of study, DLDOT tells you what intersections should be investigated, both existing and proposed site driveways. They also give you a list of the other committed developments that they want you to include. They also give you the growth factor, which is more growth, not specific to a site plan, to include within that traffic study. All of this was done in this application in our scope of study and became our first step. The next step in dealing with DLDOT is you do the traffic counts as requested. In this case, we did AM and PM during the week, but the peak period and most important design peak period turns out to be the Saturday shopping peak. All of these intersections were counted for these time periods. The actual traffic counts are submitted to DLDOT for their review and approval. And if there's any questions, those questions are answered at that time. Then DLDOT requires a preliminary traffic impact study. The preliminary study, besides the volumes, which I spoke to, would include your first calculations of the trip generation, in other words, how much traffic will be generated, not only by the application, but by every individual committed development that they've also given you to include in your baseline. Besides trip generation, you have to do an estimate of trip distribution. Which way do they turn, right and left? Which roads do they use? How do they travel through the study intersections? So that preliminary study includes all of those steps. Again, there's comments, questions, a back and forth if required, and that produces finally the numbers you need to do the traffic impact study. The traffic impact study is when you're first actually measuring capacities and levels of service, determining deficiencies if they exist. We do have some here, and determining what level of improvements would be done. The DOT requirement is that you do the future with and without the proposed application. There is no requirement to study existing zoning on an application for rezoning. The future, of course, would include your existing baseline, your background growth, which in this case boosted existing numbers by a full 30%, and then the additional traffic generated by the 1,500 dwelling units that are shown as being proposed in this immediate area. The future with development superimposes then the assumption of our application. Now that has changed over time, and that's reflected on this first external board that we show here with three color codes. The first code in blue shows the actual traffic study submitted by us back in May 2006. The development at that point included 456 dwelling units, 330,000 square feet of retail space, and a 1,000-seat performing arts center. And we show three groupings of these numbers for the AM peak hour, the PM peak hour, and the Saturday peak hour. Again, AM, PM, and Saturday. When DLDOT had the work done by their own independent consultant, which was McCormick Taylor and Associates, the development had changed. The Performing Arts Center and the residential were removed from the plan, but the retail was assumed to increase from the 330,000 square foot in the Orth Rogers study to 521,000 square feet in the McCormick Taylor study. Those are the numbers shown in red in the center. McCormick Taylor numbers. In green, it shows the actual discussion of the application that's before you this evening. This includes 19,200 square feet of office and a 298,560 square foot community shopping center. Those are the numbers shown in green. AM peak, PM peak, and Saturday. In all cases, the Saturday peak produces the highest numbers versus PM during the week and AM. Each one's an individual hour. So for example, the Saturday peak hour represents clock time 12 noon to 1 p.m. The Saturday peak hour, as done by DLDOT and McCormick Taylor, was 1,888 trips at its peak. The application before you this evening is for 1,193 trips. That's essentially a 700-trip reduction in 1 hour, which is 37%, more than one-third. It's important for two reasons. One, the improvements, which I'm going to be talking about later, and the model, which I'll be showing you later, still assume the red numbers in our analysis. We're taking no credit for discounting the actual projected numbers now, which are shown in green. And our client has committed, and in fact has now signed, an agreement with DLDOT to fund, frankly, more than its fair share of road improvements in right-of-way based upon much higher numbers than shown in these documents. Someone asked me, for example, with this draft agreement, if I can call it that, with the YMCA. The YMCA, according to the Institute of Transportation Engineers, on a Saturday afternoon between 12 noon and 1 p.m., would generate a total of 80 trips. 80 trips. This is compared with a reduction of 700 trips. Now, the Y application, I'm sure, will stand on its own merits if it becomes before the planning and the council, but from an order of magnitude, you can see it easily would be covered under the McCormick-Taylor number shown in red. Given all of this work, there has been an agreement with DLDOT. We'll go to our next exhibit. We're not marking these at this point, but...
No, they'll become part of the record.
Okay. We show two intersections before and after conditions. Kings Highway and Dartmouth Road on the left, before condition, after condition, and Dartmouth and Route 1, before and after. This would be Kings Highway. This is Route 1. This is Dartmouth. This is Route 1. This is Dartmouth. Site would be in this direction. Site would be down in this direction. Again, Kings Highway, Dartmouth, Route 1, and Dartmouth, our site heading up this way, our site heading in this direction, before and after for those two intersections. At Dartmouth and, Kings Highway and Dartmouth, today, a signalized intersection, DLDOT had two alternatives under consideration. They've selected a roundabout design, as shown here. Within that roundabout design, there'll be a bypass of the roundabout for the predominant flow southbound on Kings, approaching Route 1, and northbound from 1 to go back northbound on Kings. Bypass lane southbound on Kings to 1 and returning in this direction. That leaves the local traffic as the traffic that goes through the roundabout. There's an ACRADE intersection scheme that they also advanced. It also would work, but DLDOT has chosen to proceed with this roundabout scheme.
Have they said when they're going to do that?
No, they haven't.
Okay,
no.
Thank you.
I have more to say, though, and I was going to lead up to that, but that's fine. Okay, Dartmouth and Route 1. Dartmouth and Route 1. Under existing conditions, there's two lanes today to go from Dartmouth south on Route 1. Under the proposed improvement, there'll be three lanes to make the left turn, matching the three lanes on southbound 1, and a right turn lane to continue northbound on 1. Right turn lane, a double left turn lane, comes a triple left turn lane to match the three lanes that exist. Under the agreement with DLDOT, my client would contribute $50,000 to the intersection improvement at Dartmouth and Route 1. Next graphic. It gets difficult to see these, I would think. We show three intersections. We show them both before and after. The before condition is always at the top, the after condition at the bottom. On the left-hand side, we have the intersection of the high school, Cape Henelope and High School driveway, Gills Neck Road, and Kings Highway, before and after. I'll do that one first. Again, the high school, Gills Neck, Kings Highway. This intersection calls for several improvements. In the northbound direction on Kings Highway, approaching the signal, it will be widened for a separate left turn lane into the high school, a through lane continuing north, and a separate right turn lane turning onto Gills Neck Road. In the southbound direction, again widened for three lanes, a left turn lane to go into Gills Neck, a straight across lane, and a right turn lane. So both approaches here and here are widened to three lanes for a left, straight, right, straight, left. The Gills Neck Road approach itself is also widened to three lanes, a left turn lane, a through lane to the high school, a right turn lane in the northbound direction. The high school has two lanes today, but they are modified under this scheme. Two lanes exiting to a left turn lane exiting the high school and a common lane for either right turns, south if you will, on Kings, or straight across to Gills Neck. Within this signal, we will be having pedestrian signals installed as well with walk, don't walk, and would hope to see also the countdown signal timing heads put in, which tell pedestrians exactly how many seconds remain before the light will change. Pedestrian push buttons, of course, would be part of that requirement. That's a substantial improvement there in itself. At Clay Road and Kings Highway, which is our next graphic, the fourth leg would be coming in from the community shopping center, and a signal would be installed. Fourth leg and a signal. Westbound coming out of the site driveway, we would have two left turn lanes, one straight across lane on Clay, one turning right on Kings. To facilitate that double left turn lane, Kings Highway southbound has to be widened for at least an additional 1,000 feet and then taper back in to one lane. So besides the double left, it's widened down two through lanes and tapering in. That's a substantial improvement in its own right. On the Kings Highway, again, it would be widened for a separate left turn lane, straight through lane, right turn lane, in both directions. Kings Highway, left turn lane, straight, right turn lane, both north and southbound. And Clay Road would be widened for three lanes. Left turn lane north, straight across to the shopping center, right turn to go south. The other graphic shows Gills Neck Road and the commercial site entrance. Obviously, there's no site entrance under existing. It shows the site entrance coming in the future. This intersection would also be signalized. There'd be separate right and left turn lanes on Gills Neck and two lanes exiting, one for right turns, one for left turns from the shopping center. Right turn lane in, left turn out, right turn out. In addition to that intersection improvement, our client also will be widening Gills Neck Road from its King Highway intersection to the beginning of the curve. This is approximately 1/2 mile. The road will be rebuilt to local road standards with shoulders according to DLDOT specifications. I should mention, besides the physical construction activity, my client will fund 100% of the cost and build the improvements at Kings Neck and Gills Lane and the high school, also at Clay, Kings, and the shopping center driveway, and obviously the shopping center as it connects to Gills Neck. All of those improvements would be done by the applicant. In addition, the applicant will be dedicating right away for a future four-lane widening of Kings Highway. They'll be widening dedicating right-of-way essentially on both sides of Kings Highway between two different land holdings that they have. They'll also be dedicating right-of-way on Gill's Neck and on Clay. So that in itself will be quite significant. Physical construction within total, $3.6 million. These are off-site costs, not site-related costs, and an estimated right-of-way contribution totaling, so the total dollars would be $8.5 million from the applicant. All of this is detailed in the agreement, which has been signed and put into evidence this evening. Lastly, there was some discussion about a model that was shown, and I'd like to conclude my testimony by showing DLDOT's model and then showing some corrections, if you will, to the DLDOT model. Now, unfortunately, we can only show it once, so it might be difficult to see for some people. I apologize for that. This is a synchro simulation of traffic. We're going to show here the single hour, the highest hour, which you'll recall was Saturday, from 12 noon to 1 o'clock. So this shows us starting the clock at 12 noon. It will run to 1 o'clock. Traffic engineering is always done hourly. Our whole procedures and methodology are to calculate on an hourly basis. And this model is also designed to then input the numbers, the volumes for 1 hour, and see what happens at these intersections. This simulation was done by DLDOT probably a couple of years ago. And Eric will do a blow up. I'll explain what we're looking at here. We're running this in real time. So if you had the if you watch the signal change down here, it actually changes the way it would be in the field. This is Route 1. This would be in the southbound direction. This is Dartmouth, Kings Highway. The site in question would be located up here. And you'll see cars and trucks. The different color coding indicates where they're going to be turning later in the system. So there's no other motive to show that. When we looked at this model, which we believe has been relied upon by Mr. Lenhart, we found a few mistakes in it, the DLDOT procedure. You'll notice, if you can see here, for some reason the model is stopping traffic coming on from Kings South at this location and also on Route 1 South at this location. That traffic obviously should be continuing down to where it meets the rest of the queue in both those directions. We don't know why it's doing that, because like I said, it's work product done by others, but that's something that could be fixed. This becomes the critical link and the critical location, the ability for this double left turn lane to become a triple left turn lane and work efficiently to find gaps in Route 1 traffic through the traffic signal. We found another mistake here, a coding error. The opposing right turns, and that's significant because the opposition is to this turning movement, shows 777 right turns occurring in 1 hour from 12 noon to 1 o'clock. That number was entered incorrectly by DLDOT. That number should be 277, not 777. That's 500 fewer vehicles that should be located out there. These numbers, again, that we're showing you are what I referred to earlier in the bar graphs. Is the red numbers, the numbers that are higher than what we're currently proposing from the site. They include the existing base, factored up by 30% for background growth, and then the addition of roughly 1,500 other committed developments. What this starts to show is a queue building, ignoring why this glitch was occurring here in this direction. Derek, why don't you go to 12:30? We'll just fast forward in the interest of time here. We'll go up to like 12:30 now.
Now, what day of the week is this?
These are Saturdays.
These are Saturdays. Okay.
Yes, sir. Saturday in the summer.
I don't know what's supposed to prove.
Now it shows queuing here.
I don't.
And Derek, slide on up. You'll see this queue starts to show that it's extending. Keep going. Up through the Clay Road and proposed site access. Continuing. Keep going, Derek.
And the point is?
Through Gill's Neck Road. Continuing. There, it can go all the way. Until essentially up to Freeman. The point is, it's incorrect, but this model has been shown in this fashion, and I want to try to correct the record for that. As such, we'll now go to the modifications that we made to debug those locations we showed and to correct that traffic volume from 777 to 277. Derek, we'll go back to room one again. Saturday, peak hour, after full development, 12 noon to 1 o'clock. Let's go to 12:30. Just in the interest of time, we'll fast forward.
I didn't realize traffic moves so well on Saturday. I usually avoid that area.
Don't go.
Now the queue now moves down to the intersection. It's no longer stopping artificially here or here.
Excuse me, sir. Just real quick. Ladies and gentlemen, if you could keep it down so we can keep the presentation going. It gets hard for everybody up here to hear when there's so much talking in the background. Thank you.
And continue up. Congestion is now removed through here. Stop here at this intersection. You'll see traffic coming out. I should mention that one of the DLDOT requirements is that we build essentially a public street, which will link Kings Highway at Clay up to our site access on Gill's Neck, as shown here.
How much of these improvements have to do with the communities that were approved, and how much it has to do with the shopping center?
I don't have a definitive answer for that, in that we always include them all, then we put it back together. So clearly anything that's site driveway related, I mean, left and right turn lanes into the site at both locations, this improvement, the double left and the receiving two lanes, those are all site driven in that respect. These produce acceptable levels of service. We have not widened Kings Highway to four lanes, which DLDOT does call for at some point in their future plan. You'd asked me that question earlier. I was going to mention it at this point. None of the DLDOT improvements are programmed. And to my knowledge, as of now, there's no money for DLDOT to fund those improvements, with the exception of the $50,000 contribution my client will make at Route 1 in Dartmouth, and, of course, the right-of-way dedication, which they will be making as the agreement calls for. Yeah, and continue, Derek. High school entrance and no queuing now. So the queuing problem shown on the earlier DLDOT model is dissipated by just making those corrections.
And you've made DLDOT aware of this, of their mistake?
No.
Okay.
DLDOT, I think in truth, didn't expect their model to be shown. And it was shown by others. And since it was shown by others, we took this step to analyze it. The work we've done, we've just done in the past week. So we have shown it to know. You're seeing it for the first time. Client saw it like an hour ago. You're seeing it now.
I guess what I'm getting at is, weren't there already some improvements that were agreed to regarding the developments, the senators and governors and those housing developments, sure, along Gill's Neck Road?
I think the DLDOT agreement refers to
Some
of those
them
as well, yes.
Okay, so that's all one.
Yeah,
okay.
A trigger mechanism could be, as I recall, 112th dwelling unit,
mm-hmm,
or okay, phase one of the community
so the
shopping
developer
center.
So the developer will still have to make, yeah, improvements.
And they're in that agreement.
Okay, regardless.
I don't want to interrupt Mr. Rogers, yes, but I do want to make sure that it's clear, Ms. Deaver, that you understand that Cadbury, Breakwater, Schofield will have their own separate agreements for whatever improvements they may be required to make to any of the surrounding public roads with DLDOT. The agreement that we gave you deal with senators, governors, and the village center site.
Okay, so if this is not approved, they still have to make improvements for governors and senators, and that was, yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And that's shown in the first paragraph of, yes, the agreement with DLDOT, those communities.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
All right, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Are there any questions from council?
Okay. Ms. Deaver, gentlemen, let me just briefly wrap this up on behalf of the applicant. Again, as I pointed out to you, I don't think there's any question that at some point, Don, this particular site will be developed. It will not remain in farmland, whether it's this use or another use. The comprehensive plan does have certain requirements which are to be met by this applicant. The application does comply with the requirements of the comp plan map, which is the requirement of Delaware law. These matters are all set forth in the exhibit book, which I encourage you to take the time to read. Again, admittedly, it's not light reading, but it is important reading. As Mr. Key has pointed out, the green belt around Lewis, which is what other people would seek in this area, is inconsistent with the principles of the livable Delaware. That is just not what the state's planning policy is. Whether it's right or wrong, I'm not going to go there. But it is what it is. And that is that all development was pushed towards town centers. And Lewis is a town center, and this development is occurring on the periphery of Lewis. With reference to DelDOT, there is a letter of no objection, which you've seen. You've seen the agreement between DelDOT and the applicant for the projects that we just spoke of. I want you to understand that that reflects a relationship between the applicant and its projects and the impact that it has on the public roads. It does not reflect the impact of, again, Cadbury, Breakwater, or others, but it is supposed to represent the proportionate contribution that LTA should pay. The PLUS report was favorable and that there was no objection to this particular application. We have in this book, and you've heard from our economist about the economic benefits that go with this particular project. I would like to point out, or at least reiterate what I said earlier, and that is that if this project or this rezoning is approved, one does not snap one fingers and 320,000 square feet of shopping center appear. It takes time for this project to be built. If it is approved, it will be phased in and will respond to the market conditions. The architecture of the surrounding area in the city of Lewis have been considered as a part of the design element, and you have seen or heard from our expert in that regard. The decision that you need to be making on this particular application is one that must be supported by the evidence on the record, not anything else. This is not about what you read in the Cape Gazette. It's not about yellow placards that appear before the county building. It's not about petitions. It's about what's on this record. And we have presented to you a record that we believe that supports this particular application. I also would point out to you that it's the law of this state that land use laws are to be liberally construed in favor of the landowner, and that the use is to be favorably construed in favor of the landowner.
The landowner who's applying?
The landowner who is applying.
Or the landowners who live around it?
No, the landowner who is applying.
Okay. Here you go.
It requires more than the opponents to come in and give anecdotal testimony or generalized concerns about what's wrong with this project. It requires more than petitions or repetitions of letters. It's not a popularity contest. It's not about editorials and newspapers. This meeting and this process is supposed to be based upon the record. And in doing this, your work on this particular record, I want to remind you of the challenge that was laid before you by Vice Chancellor Strine in the case of Gibson versus Sussex County. And it's very simple. He said, in making a land use approval decision of this kind, the council is not free to bend to the prevailing breeze, but must rationally and fairly apply its zoning code and regulations. Ms. Deaver, gentlemen, that means you must apply your comp plan and this zoning code, not anything else, to this particular application. Thank you.
Questions? Just a minute. Who were you quoting just then, Mr. Schrader?
I was quoting Vice Chancellor Strine in a case called Gibson versus Sussex County Council. Thank you.
Any other questions from council? We will allow our attorney to open up the floor for those folks from the public who may be in favor of this application.
Just real quick, Claire, forgot you had mentioned that we were going to take a recess. Do you want to do that after the votes in favor?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. Is there anyone here this evening who would like to speak in favor of this application? I see this gentleman standing up in the back. Let me ask first, I guess, to keep things moving forward. Is there someone here that represents an organized group that wishes to speak in favor? We'll start with him. Same person. Come on up.
Kind of line up if you want, and you go.
And I would remind everybody that there's a sign-up sheet so that we can get your name at the podium. So if you could, thanks, list your name up there as requested. So it'll make it into the minutes and the record.
I am from Rez.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you. My name is C.W. Mitchell. I'm here on behalf of the YMCA. I am the chairman of the Board of Governors for the Sussex Family YMCA. I'll be pretty brief, and I have two colleagues from the Y who will be here also. Excuse me. As part of the overall plan for development of their site on Kings Highway, LT Associates has most generously offered a gift of land to the YMCA. We feel this will be an excellent location to provide expanded YMCA services to our community. At every stage of life, the YMCA is there to help children, families, and individuals reach their full potential. The Sussex Family YMCA is operating at its capacity in our Rehoboth location on Church Street. We provide services for 4,600 facility members, another 1,500 program members, and additional services for a number of other agencies, including senior centers, the Sussex Consortium, Special Olympics, and multiple small groups like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and church groups. Over the last 5 years, we have looked at multiple locations within a 20-mile radius of our current location. We think YMCA programming on this site on Kings Highway would be a marvelous asset to coastal Delaware community. Our YMCA master plan includes facilities which would enhance the quality of life in the Lewis area. We currently have a signed agreement to receive a gift of land if the LT Associates project is approved.
If it's not approved, you got nothing?
If it's not approved, we have nothing.
You got nothing. Nothing like having a little pressure put on you by the Y. Well,
that's not what it's meant for, Mary.
Go ahead, Nick.
That's what it is.
Don't be shy, folks.
Thanks. I'm Ann Caldwell. I also represent the board for the YMCA, and I just want to tell you a little bit about our needs for space, especially our need for wellness and fitness space, our need for youth programming space, and our need for gymnasium space. If we're able to do this, we would build a state-of-the-art fitness center that doubles the size of our current extremely crowded fitness center. We would implement special starter fitness, senior citizen group training areas would increase. There would be classrooms for yoga, chair yoga for seniors, spinning, group aerobics, physical therapy. All of our ability to do that would increase. Our youth program right now includes after-school programs at Rehoboth and Shields Elementary Schools, our top-rated Giant Step preschool, summer day camps, youth fitness center, sports. We could do more of all of that, and we certainly need the space to do that. Gymnasium activities in this area, as I'm sure most of you know, this space is at a premium. And although the school districts have been terrific about giving us gymnasium space, we've often had to cancel programs because we have conflicted with other community groups. And so if we got this location, we would build a double gymnasium. That double gymnasium would mean that we could have adult sports leagues, indoor lacrosse and soccer, much larger instruction for fitness classes, open times for various special events and sporting events, and our popular pickleball for seniors would be able to be increased. So it includes time for more kids programs. Sign up.
Those exactly. Two will drive all the way from their part of the county just to go for the. What is
right.
It? A pickle what?
Pickleball.
Yeah. Pickleball.
It's
yeah.
Wonderful. Really, you should think about it.
Are they sour or sweet?
Gherkins. Sweet, definitely sweet. Okay.
Thank you.
If some other kind of use would be approved, would the deal still hold up, or is it just this?
That's all I'm negotiating.
Yeah, and I would say that's all because. It's a different issue, as is really the why, because that's
right.
On a different
but
site.
Make it brief on the why, because it's not the application.
Ms. Deaver, Council, good evening. My name is Georgia Spade, and I am a water aerobics instructor at the YMCA. Our aquatics program is unique to our area and a very, very important part of the success of the Y. However, our pool is overcrowded. Multiple groups constantly ask for more pool time. A dramatic increase in the number of new retirees that are coming to the area and seeking aquatics exercise has created waiting lists for these classes. 5 years ago, We had an average class of 20. Today, we have an average class of 45, and we expect that growth to continue. Our new auditorium would include two pools, one, a desperately needed water, warm water therapy pool for exercise for seniors, those suffering from arthritis and multiple sclerosis, individuals undergoing rehab and swim lessons for younger children. The second pool would be an eight-lane.
I want to ask you to wrap it up because we're talking about this particular site, and I don't think anybody disputes that the Y is a great program and a great organization, but we already said that we're not going to get into site plan issues on this site, and since the Y is another property next door, I think we should kind of move things along.
But we do understand that the Y needs space because you're crowded.
We sure do.
We got the point.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for laying us.
Thank you. The next person in line, I think, we're still talking about folks who are in favor of the application. Sir, could give your name and place of residence and sign the sheet.
He's from Tidewater.
It's a customer.
Good evening. My name is Jeremy Kambacher. I'm with Tidewater Utilities, 1100 South Little Creek Road, Dover, Delaware. This project is located in Tidewater's franchise area. There is existing infrastructure to serve this project on Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road. When the development's on-site distribution system is installed, it will connect to other adjacent developments, which will create a redundant loop to serve those developments, will actually enhance our quality of service to those developments. This project will strengthen our existing customer base in Sussex County, and we'd love to serve the YMCA as well. Thank you.
I'm sure you would.
Who do we have next in favor? This gentleman in the back. Come on up.
Here he comes.
We've got a lot of folks, too, so start making your way up if you're
Yeah, if there's anybody else, get in line, please.
Tidewater will be importing the water and won't use up all Lewis's water either. Right, George?
What's that, Sam?
The Tidewater will be importing the water in, so they won't be using all Lewis's water.
Maybe, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, Sam.
Big
bankers
of that.
Should have asked him.
Gentlemen, Ms. Deaver, you too, George. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have all these fancy titles behind my name like everybody I've heard speak tonight, but I do think I got an education in what I'm going to speak about. My education comes from a school of hard knocks, trying to make a living for four boys and a wife. And I brought five or six of my employees with me tonight. One of them's a 23-year-old young man with a small child. Got to make a living. He chose 2 or 3 years ago to go into construction business. I think the construction business is probably about as bad as any business we have in Sussex County. We need these jobs. We need them desperately. I'm speaking for the 20-plus people I had to lay off the 23rd day of December, 2 days before Christmas. That touched my heart terribly. Because I remember quite a few years ago, a banker summoned me in because I owed him $3,000 that I couldn't pay out that farming year. 23rd day of December, the first words out of his mouth, David, I'm going to sell you home. I've never forgot that. The 23rd day of December of 2008 was probably one of the roughest days I've had lately, and I've had some rough days with health issues, but that tore me up. Ladies and gentlemen, we need these jobs not only for the construction industry, but for what the jobs that are being in the stores and what have you. And Ms. Deaver, one thing I want to leave with you and all the new council members, I think George was on the council the last time I was before this for a bar pit, not the last time, but one time. I put that bar pit right across from my home, so if, and this is what I told planning and zoning, if I lived across from this project, if I owned that project, I wouldn't mind putting it across from my home. Thank you, guys. Give the job some consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, any questions? George, I'll take one from
you. I'll call you if I get a question.
Next person in favor of the application? Mr. President, I don't see any other folks that wish to speak in favor at this point.
Okay. As promised, we will take a 10 or so minute break. As a courtesy to the public, the staff has provided some light refreshments in the back you can enjoy, and we'll reconvene at about 20 of 9.
We can afford doing that kind of stuff. Oh, where did that come out of?
I kicked him 20 bucks.
Get out of here, you did.